We're continuing chapter 24 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. That night's meal should have been a cheerful one, with Mr. Weasley back amongst them. Harry could tell Sirius was trying to make it so. Yet when his godfather was not forcing himself to laugh loudly at Fred and George's jokes, or offering everyone more food, his face fell back into a moody, brooding expression. Harry was separated from him by Mundungus and Mad-Eye, who had dropped in to offer Mr. Weasley their congratulations. He wanted to talk to Sirius, to tell him that he shouldn't listen to a word Snape said, that Snape was goading him deliberately, and that the rest of them didn't think Sirius was a coward for doing as Dumbledore told them and remaining in Grimmauld Place. Oh yeah, that's what happened. But he had no opportunity to do so, and occasionally, eyeing the ugly look on Sirius's face, whether he would have dared to, even if he had had the chance. Instead, he told Ron and Hermione under his voice about having to take occlumency lessons with Snape. "Dumbledore wants to stop you having those dreams about Voldemort," said Hermione at once. "Well, you won't be sorry not to have them anymore, will you?" "Extra lessons with Snape," said Ron, sounding aghast. "I'd rather have the nightmares." They were to return to Hogwarts on the night bus the following day. You know, oh my god, it's so annoying. How can you turn down an offer to learn awesome magic?
This one isn't as awesome, though.
The ability to handle, like, mind tricks?
But that's not really what Snape winds up teaching him. He's trying to teach him to close his mouth,
yeah.
Which is, like, way harder. It's, like, super hippy-dippy, kind of this whole, like, imagine,
well,
like,
it turns
Alexander
out,
technique,
no,
and
no.
It doesn't really work.
It turns out Snape isn't a very good teacher, or at least J.K. Rowling isn't very good at explaining what Snape's doing. The impression I have is that this is actually a legitimate part of magic. Like, Snape's really good
at it.
It
is legitimate, but I'm just saying, no, Snape is really good at it, but I'm just saying it takes a long time to learn.
Oh, sure.
And, like, they're trying
awesome
to teach Harry.
Oh, yeah, in,
like,
a month.
Yeah.
I know,
and,
I know.
Like, also, Dumbledore is the one who should be teaching him because...
Well, presumably Dumbledore's not as good at it. And
no, Dumbledore.
Oh, yeah.
Is,
he does, but doesn't want to.
But he doesn't want to be close to
yeah.
Harry to do this because it's, you know, dangerous.
Yeah.
But, turns out that it's pretty much lose-lose situation.
Turns out.
So,
but
basically, Snape kills Sirius. That's what happens.
But, no, but in fairness, it's a pretty awesome part of magic. And my
it is, but
my
I'm just saying that then Snape refuses to teach Harry because
oh,
Harry
yeah.
tries to do what Snape has been doing to him, and which I don't think is that unfair. And so, there
oh,
you go.
Yeah, well, Harry just... He needs to deal with things.
No, Snape needs to deal with things, too. I mean, how old is Harry here?
Oh, Snape needs to deal with things, too, yeah. But they both need to deal with things.
Okay,
but Harry should
Harry
be the bigger
is,
man.
No, Harry is, like, 14. Snape is in his 40s.
Yeah.
Grow a fucking pair and be a man, Snape. Be a man.
Fair enough. Anyways.
I win. Say I win.
You win. They were to return to Hogwarts on the night bus. Are you shaking your boob?
My booty.
Your booty?
Mm-hmm. Sexy.
Shh. Tell the children.
Shh.
The baby goes. They were to return to Hogwarts on the night bus the following day, escorted once again by Tonks and Lupin, both of whom were eating breakfast in the kitchen when Harry, Ron, and Hermione arrived there next morning. The adults seemed to have been midway through a whispered conversation when the door opened. All of them looked around hastily and fell silent. After a hurried breakfast, they pulled on jackets and scarves against the chilly January morning. Harry had an unpleasant, constricted sensation in his chest. He didn't want to say goodbye to Sirius. He had a bad feeling about this parting. He didn't know when they would next see each other and felt it was incumbent upon him to say something to Sirius to stop him from doing anything stupid. Harry worried that Snape's accusation of cowardice had stung Sirius so badly that he might now be planning some foolhardy trip beyond Grimmauld Place. Before he could think of what to say, however, Sirius had beckoned him to the summit. "I want you to take this," he said quietly, thrusting a badly wrapped package roughly the size of Harry of a paperback book into Harry's hands. "What is it?" Harry asked. "A way of letting me know if Snape's giving you a hard time." "No, don't open it here," said Sirius, with a wary look at Mrs. Weasley, who was trying to persuade the twins to wear hand-knitted mittens. "I doubt Molly would approve, but I want you to use it if you need me, all right?" "Okay," said Harry, stowing the package away in the inside pocket of his jacket. But he knew that he would never use whatever it was. It would not be he, Harry, who lured Sirius from his place of safety, no matter how foully Snape treated him in their forthcoming occultancy classes. "Let's go, then," said Sirius, clapping Harry on the shoulder and smiling grimly. But before Harry could say anything, they were heading upstairs, stopping before the heavily chained and bolted front door, surrounded by Weasleys. "Goodbye, Harry. Take care," said Mrs. Weasley, hugging him. "See you, Harry, and keep an eye out for snakes for me," said Mr. Weasley genially, shaking his hand. "Right, yeah," said Harry distractedly. It was his last chance to tell Sirius to be careful. He turned, looked into his godfather's face, and opened his mouth to speak, but before he could do so, Sirius was giving him a brief one-armed hug. He said gruffly, "Look after yourself, Harry." And the next moment, Harry found himself being shunted out into the icy winter air, with Tonks, heavily disguised as a tall, tweedy woman with iron-gray hair, chivying him down the steps. The door of number 12 slammed shut behind them. They followed Lupin down the front steps. As he reached the pavement, Harry looked around. Number 12 was shrinking rapidly as those on either side of it stretched sideways, squeezing it out of sight. One blink later, it had gone. "Come on, the quicker we get on the bus, the better," said Tonks, and Harry thought there was nervousness in the glance she threw around the square. Lupin flung out his right arm. Bang! A violent, purple, triple-deckered bus had appeared out of thin air in front of them, narrowly avoiding the nearest lamppost, which jumped backward out of its way. A thin, pimply, jug-eared youth in a purple uniform leapt down onto the pavement and said, "Welcome to the..." "Yes, yes, we know," said Tonks swiftly. "Thank you. On, get on." As she shoved Harry forward toward the steps, past the conductor, who goggled at Harry as he passed. "Here, it's Harry." "If you shout his name, I will curse you into oblivion," muttered Tonks, now shunting Ginny and Hermione forward. "I've always wanted to go on this thing," said Ron happily, joining Harry on board and looking around. It had been evening the last time Harry had traveled by night bus, and its three decks had been full of brass bedsteads. Now, in the early morning, it was crammed with an assortment of mismatched chairs, grouped haphazardly around windows. Some of these appeared to have fallen over when the bus stopped abruptly in Grimmauld Place. A few witches and wizards were still getting to their feet, grumbling, and somebody's shopping bag had slid the length of the bus. An unpleasant mixture of frogs, spawn, cockroaches, and custard creams was scattered all over the floor. Delicious. Looks as if we'll have to split
Proteiny.
Up. Proteiny is right, except for the custard.
No, it has eggs in it.
Is custard made of eggs?
Eggs and cream.
"Looks like we'll have to split up," said Tonks briskly, looking around for empty chairs. "Fred, George, and Ginny, if you just take those seats in the back, Remus can stay with you." She, Harry, Ron, and Hermione proceeded up to the very top, where there were two chairs at the very front of the bus and two at the back. It's Dan Shunpike, the conductor, followed Harry and Ron eagerly into the back. Heads turned as Harry passed, and when he sat down, he saw all the faces flick back to the front again. As Harry and Ron handed Stan 11 sickles each, the bus set off again, swaying ominously. It rumbled around Grimmauld Square, weaving on off the pavement. And then, with another tremendous bang, they were all flung backward. Ron's chair toppled right out of over Pigwidgeon, who had been on his lap, and Pigwidgeon, who had been on his lap, burst out of his cage and flew twitteringly wildly up to the front of the bus, where he fluttered down upon Hermione's shoulder instead. Harry, who had narrowly avoided falling by seizing a candle bracket, looked out of the window. They were now speeding down what appeared to be a motorway. "Just outside Birmingham," said Stan happily, answering Harry's unasked question as Ron struggled up from the floor. "You keeping well then, Harry? I seen your name in the paper loads over the summer, but it weren't very enough. Weren't never nothing very nice. I said to Ern, I said, he didn't seem like a nutter when you met him. Just goes to show, didn't it?" Excuse me. He handed over their tickets and continued to gaze, enthralled at Harry. Apparently Stan didn't care how nutty somebody was if they were famous enough to be in the paper. The night bus swayed alarmingly, overtaking a line of cars on the inside. Looking toward the front of the bus, Harry saw Hermione cover her eyes with her hands. Pigwidgeon still swaying happily on her shoulder. Bang. Chairs slid backward again as the night bus jumped from the Birmingham motorway to a quiet country lane full of hairpin bends. Hedgerows on either side of the road were leaping out of the way as they mounted the verges. From here they moved to the main street in the middle of a busy town, and then to a viaduct surrounded by tall hills, and then to a windswept road between high-rise flats, each time with a loud bang. "I changed my mind," muttered Ron, picking himself up from the floor for the sixth time. "I never want to ride on here again." "Listen, it's Hogwarts stop after this," said Stan brightly, swaying toward them. "That bossy woman up front who got on with you, she's given us a little tip to move you up the queue. We're just going to let Madame Marsh off first, though." There was more retching from downstairs, followed by a horrible splattering sound. "She's not feeling her best." A few minutes later, the night bus screeched to a halt outside a small pub, which squeezed itself out of the way to avoid a collision. They could hear Stan ushering the unfortunate Madame Marsh out of the bus and the relieved murmurings of her fellow passengers on the second deck. The bus moved on, gathering speed, until, bang, they were rolling down through the snowy Hogsmeade. Harry caught a glimpse of the Hogshead down the side street, its severed boar's head creaking in the wintry wind. Flecks of snow hit the large window on the front of the bus. At last, they rolled to a halt outside the gates to Hogwarts. Lupin and Tonks helped them off the bus with their luggage, and then got off to say goodbye. Harry glanced up at the three decks of the night bus and saw all the passengers staring down at them, noses flat against the windows. "You'll be safe once you're on the ground," said Tonks, casting a careful eye around the deserted road. "Have a good term, okay?" "Look after yourself," said Lupin, shaking hands all around and reaching Harry last. "Listen," he lowered his voice while the rest of them exchanged last-minute goodbyes with Tonks. "Harry, I know you don't like Snape, but he is a superb Occlumens, and we all, Sirius included, want you to learn to protect yourself, so work hard, all right?" "Yeah, all right," said Harry heavily, looking up into Lupin's prematurely lined face. "See you then." The six of them struggled up the slippery drive toward the castle, dragging their trunks. Hermione was already talking about knitting a few elf hats before bedtime. Harry glanced around when they reached up the oak front doors. The night bus had already gone, and he half wished, given what was coming the following day, that he was still on board. I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my kitty boo. You're the sweetest kitten ever. I love you so much. Sleep well, baby girl. Good night.